first of all, how did it all start out with the trees? You've been around for like 20 odd years or even longer than that. A lot of people haven't heard of the trees, but you've been around for such a long time and you've had not only a few albums but quite a bit of success, especially at the beginning. How did it all start out?
It was 30 years ago, actually. It was more, because I can tell you it was 1980, which makes it 32. This was the end of the punk scene, and we were living in a village. We was Justin and I, my brother. We were living in a tiny village in Worcestershire, in the middle of England. We loved music, and we got together with another couple of brothers, the Havers brothers, and formed a band, which was like a sort of punk rock thing to do, because we couldn't play any instruments. We had no musical experience.
So it's kind of out of the blue, let's start a band and see what happens.
Sort of. We needed to make our own entertainment then, and so we formed a band. We learned how to play the instruments as we played, and we played as we wrote. Organised our own concerts. We were incredibly naive. I mean, the first shows that we did, Justin was 14, and I was 19, and Nick was even younger than Justin. He was 14 as well. So, and then we went off on a tour with The Cure, which was a strange and lucky break we had. They advertised for support bands. This is when they were at the beginning of their career, and they were still an underground band then.
And they actually asked you guys to come and support them on tour.
Yeah. We sent them a tape, and they really liked it, and we were invited to go on tour with them, and that was a big help for us.
You got a record deal then, or what happened?
No, we didn't. It took us a long time to get a record deal. Probably, to be honest, partly because we couldn't play very well. We weren't good musicians. We'd just picked up instruments and learnt how to play them with no experience at all.
Loads of these in the 80s, just think of... Yeah, in the 70s, even Joy Division, they couldn't play their instruments at
the
beginning
at all.
No,
we couldn't. The passion was there, and the feel was there, but actually we couldn't play them very well, and I certainly couldn't sing very well. So it was a slow learning process, but also it was a massive handicap living in a small village in that respect. Living in a village in rural England became a big part of the band because we wrote about our environment. Bands hadn't done that before. But that was some years later. We started to let ourselves be influenced by our surroundings and the history of the landscape that we were living in. So in that respect, creatively, it was very a very positive thing. But practically speaking, it was a massive handicap because there was no one that knew anything about the music industry to help us. There were no other bands hardly making any music, and there was no scene. So it took a long time. And in the end, there was a record company that was quite close, like about 20 miles away, that discovered us. But they were like an oi punk record label that were branching out. There were the No Future Records.
What happened then? Because you had a certain kind of success. When you read some magazines in the early 80s, you find your name there. I didn't know you guys before, but when I did the research, I thought, there is some stuff about you, so people must have known that you're around.
Of course they did, yeah. We did a John Peel session, and we did more tours with The Cure, because we were like one of their favourite bands. They really loved our music, and so we played in big venues, and we got in all the music papers. I mean, this, yeah, big deal.
God, why didn't you bloody like stick to it, like got some money out of this, like, you know, tell them to kind of get you a record deal and Robert Smith could have managed you or something?
Well, if I'd have done that, then I wouldn't be here now, and I wouldn't have been here 10 years ago, and or probably even 15 years ago, because I don't think we'd have developed the way we have done. I think having that kind of commercial success would have turned us into a different band and into different people.
Didn't you want that at the time? Didn't you want to have commercial success, or was it something that just didn't happen?
What we wanted more than anything else was our own creative freedom, and that was one of the problems. We never conformed to a genre or a style of music, or did what our record companies, because we had record companies. But we always did what we wanted to do. That was always important to us. We always wanted this independence and this freedom. Yes, at the time, you know, when we were in our 20s, yeah, we would have loved to have been on the front pages of the NME and on Top of the Pops. It would have been cool. It didn't happen, but it's not... I can almost say I'm glad now, looking back, because creatively speaking, I think what we're doing now is I don't want to say better than what we were doing then, is a bit silly to compare, but we're very happy with what we're doing now creatively, and it's not, we're doing it for the right reason. We're not doing it just to put a record out to pay the bills, which some people have to do. I'm glad we don't have to do that, because music's different for us.
Absolutely. So, are you still friends with The Cure, or has that kind of gone, everybody's gone their separate ways?
Justin's in touch. We never fell out, so I mean they're still very generous and interested in what we're doing, which is nice. But you know, to say we're friends would be a bit of an exaggeration.
Now, talking about the music, you just mentioned the fact that you always wrote about your where you were living and stuff, and some of the stuff you're writing is like kind of a magic world. You close your eyes and go into a very old, like Simon Jones medieval world where you write about trees and shadows and gypsy women and stuff like that. No, it's really cool. I love that.
I'm trying to write from the music. So I try and go deep down into the music, and the music goes deep down into me, and I try to find a way of expressing how the music moves me. And that does tend to be come out in quite a poetic way, but in different ways, with sort of a deep kind of contemplation of the landscape where we were living in this very remote part of Worcestershire. But then, you know, and I drift back there now, even as well in my mind, to these places and to that landscape. It's not all wrapped up in the past; it is current as well.
Now, this album's called Hunter, Not the Hunted. Are you? And what are you hunting for?
It's not about me or about us, particularly. We're not the hunters. Actually, the title was something that Justin suggested to me. He just came to me one day and said, we were thinking of a title. And he said, what about Hunter, Not the Hunted? Sounded quite good to me.
I think this album has a few different things from other Trees albums, and there's one song, well, that's where I thought about the Russian music, where it starts so beautifully and you're like in a completely different world, and then at the end you go la 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 la, and I was like okay, this is completely different. Were you in Moscow drinking vodka at that point, or where were you?
No, don't know where that comes from. Sometimes we have these Eastern European influences coming through the music. They're not pre-planned. Our music is always pretty instinctual. I suppose Justin or Ian, the bass player, would have been playing something, and hey, that's got a bit of a East European Slavic feel about it, hasn't it? And they'll play it, and then the voice will. To be honest, it just happens instinctively. It's just one of these things. I don't know where it comes from or why it came out sounding Russian to you or Croatian to somebody else, but
it came so out of the blue, because the whole song is like really like calm, and you just have this poetic voice, and then out of the blue comes la 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 la, and you think, oh, that's new, but that sounds interesting.
It's like an old Russian folk song, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's la 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 la.
So Simonov from now on.
John Simonov,
comrade.
Yes.
Two other songs that I'm interested in. Sorry about. I know that some artists don't like to speak about their lyrics, but these songs have actually touched me. So if you don't want to speak about them, it's absolutely up to you. But one of them is Ill Omen. It's a very old song, but I love that. It's so full of feeling. And the music and the lyrics go together so well. And I see like almost someone suffering on a horse, honestly, like in that clatters on. Where did that come from?
I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago. Again, it was the music. This music, the music reminded me of the sound of a train, an old steam train, one of the powerful ones. So that's the iron horse part, you see.
Wow. And the guy suffering on it.
I haven't sung it live for a long time.
You should do. One of my favourites.
Yes. Ones. It's also difficult to explain what you're talking about with lyrics, because actually what you're doing with lyrics anyway is you're trying to explain something. So you end up trying to explain what you're trying to explain, and then you start going around in circles.
Yeah. Same as Whiskey Girl, where I thought, Whiskey Girl? Wow.
Bride.
Oh, yeah, well, Whiskey Bride, I thought.
Yes.
First of all, I read it, I thought, it's not an alcoholic, is it? But then I listened to the lyric, and it was so poetic and romantic, and I thought, whoa, this is so nice.
I have no idea where that came from. there was a piece of music that was very, very tricky, which I loved. It was Justin, it was a two guitar piece, and he gave it to me. And what often happens with me is he'll give me a piece of music and I'll listen and I'll think, I have to be part of this piece of music. Wow. I really want to be part of it. So I need to find a way in, and I need to somehow find the words in the music. But I tried and I tried and I couldn't get anywhere with it. It's a very subtle and fragile melody that the guitars are playing. And then after probably about a year of trying different things out with it, I just, as is my way, I just opened up, just put the record button on and sang, "Oh my whiskey bride, you're beautiful as the day is long, you make me warm inside." I thought, where on earth did that come from? How nice that you get these gifts sometimes. You don't know where they've come from. And then just following that path. People have said it's about alcoholism, it's about whiskey, it's about woman, and of course it's one of those things where even for me when I'm singing it, it's both and neither. And it's depends on how the light shines on it that particular day.
It's really cool because you've got like you kind of paint pictures for others, and I think that's what you do best. I wonder what you feel when you sing these tracks live, whether you close your eyes and have your own little picture, your little video with it, or do you not even think when you sing it?
Oh no, I close my eyes much to the annoyance of photographers, and it's actually boring. I'd much prefer it if I could sing with my eyes open, but it's quite difficult. I definitely need to and like to live the songs that we're playing and that I'm singing. And I know these characters intimately that appear in come from the music. I know them intimately, but I don't know who they are. I know it's a contradiction, but that's the way it is.
I think that's what you want, because they kind of stay a mystery, and I think that's what you write about.
Yeah, yes. And the places. I feel like the places are really a part of me, places that I've visited, these landscapes. But I don't know where they are either.
I like what you just said about you being part of the music and you want to be part of this piece. That kind of makes you one with the music and the picture that you paint. And I'm enjoying this quite a lot, and I think that reflects in all the other projects that you do, because you do another project now. You've just told us about you sing in Russian and Italian and Hebrew. And
yeah, this is with Olivier Milano, the French musician. But that's not my... he's using me just as a singer. And this is new, because people now are asking me to sing in different projects, which is something I'm quite happy about, being as when I was at school, I wasn't allowed to sing because I was out of tune. Finally, I learnt.
So is that kind of inspiring you for what you do with the trees?
Not really. No. It's a completely different project. And it's about me singing, and about my voice, and it's not even about my interpretation, because I'm being directed. But I like it. It's a different discipline. For him, it's like putting a bridle on a bit of a wild horse, but getting the balance right. So we keep my expression, but with his direction and accuracy, because he's a real, very meticulous musician. But it's a good experience for me.
And you're getting out of this kind of... because I think a lot of people have tried to pigeonhole you into this whole gothic stuff. And I think you tried to get out of it as soon as you possibly could. But, you know, I think it might help you getting out of it with doing other things and branching out. Because your music has long since stopped sounding goth.
Well, it never really did. We were never part of that movement. I've got nothing against the movement. In fact, I've met a lot of great people who are part of that scene, really nice people at festivals and at shows and journalists. We're connected to it in a similar way to bands like Nick Cave and the Tindersticks and Joy Division even. And in the broad sense, the dark movement can be quite broad. And I know that a lot of the people that work within it want to make it as broad as they can. Mm. Unfortunately, outside of the scene, people have a very narrow view of it. like the rest of the music industry, is very scathing of the Gothic movement. They don't know much about it. They just write it all off as goth.
Dark.
Not even dark. If they said dark, that's fine, because Tim Burton's dark, and there's a lot of art and music you could call dark. The Doors are dark. David Bowie can be very dark. And if it was just dark, if people referred to it as dark, then fine, the trees are dark. I'll accept that. But the Gothic movement, back in the 80s, when the Gothic movement was something different, then, okay, there was a link to And Also the Trees, but of course not really anymore. So it doesn't do us any help if people think that we're part of that scene, because we're really not.
Finally, if someone hasn't seen you live, I've seen you live before, and some of the things that I really enjoy about you being on stage is that you're different. You're not like the odd four-piece band that goes on stage with their instruments, and you have a very what you wear, and sometimes you go on stage with a book and read poetry and stuff, and I really enjoy that.
It's a unique experience, the Trees experience. We're a band that are not like anybody else. People are saying this more and more. Reading poetry, well, that usually happens when I'm not sure of the words. To be honest, no, it's the truth. Sometimes when I'm worried that I'm not going to remember a narration, if I'm not singing, if I'm just narrating, I need to have those words there. People think it's for show. It's not, actually. It's so I can actually read them. Because if I forget the words, they're quite specific to the... they need to fit with the music. And if that goes wrong, the song's no good. So I just decided a long time ago, if I'm not sure about the words, I'll just read them.
Thank you so much. That was absolutely amazing. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you.